Hi, it's Liam here from the Early Education Show, bringing you another bonus episode this week. We're a bit excited. On Monday, July 10, we'll actually be launching the first episode of a sort of parallel sister podcast, which will be called the Early Education Show Snapshots, which will be taking some of our previous episodes, particularly from last year, and the discussions from those episodes, and just having them by themselves. So for new listeners or people who want to go back and hear those topics, they won't have to go through the news list, which was, you know, quite targeted to the week that we recorded the episode. That means you can just sort of hear those topics all by themselves. So that'll be launching on Monday. But what we're going to do for this episode of the main show, the Early Education Show, is bring you a bit of a sneak preview of the first episode. So we're actually going to put the first episode in this feed for this episode. But we'd really appreciate it if you could, you know, subscribe and share our new one as well. So we'll include a link in the show notes and on our website, earlyeducationshow.com. But you can also head to your normal podcast feed and where you find the current show you're listening to. And if you just search for Early Education Show Snapshots, you should find that one as well. We think this will be a great way as well for new listeners. So, you know, as topics come out, and we'd really appreciate if you could, you know, share that with other colleagues in the sector. We really appreciate everyone who's stuck with us for this long, and we hope you'll stick with us as we start this new experiment as well. But we'll go over now to the first episode of the Early Education Show Snapshots. Hi, it's Liam here, and welcome to the Early Education Show Snapshots, where we bring you some briefer chats and discussions from the main Early Education Show podcast. We've tackled a range of topics throughout the show and wanted to share them again in a quicker and easier format. These episodes are great if you want to catch up on old topics, and they're also great for sharing with new listeners, which we'd be very delighted if you would. Don't forget to subscribe to the show and the main Early Education Show to get new episodes as they appear. Just head to our website at earlyeducationshow.com to get all the details. While you're there, if you're enjoying what we're doing, we'd be extremely grateful if you hit the link that says support the show. Thanks to everyone who has. For our first episode, we're going to go back to a discussion on professional identity and educators in the sector. This discussion was first recorded in September 2016. We've talked a lot in our first five episodes, I think, about educators and the early childhood profession in general. So we wanted to have a discussion in this episode just sort of more generally on that topic. And we've sort of turned to the professional identity, which is something I'm really interested in. I've written a little bit about on my blog and have talked a bit about it, various things as well. I think it's one of the most crucial but undiscussed sort of elements of the sector.
So Liam, you'll include that blog, won't you, in the notes for this week, so people can read what you've said about that?
Well, I hate promoting myself, Leanne, but now that you've mentioned
that's
it, I guess
okay.
You have to.
Yeah.
I guess we wanted to have a bit of a general discussion. We know we've sort of talked about the political climate and context for early childhood professionals, you know, in earlier episodes. So I want to steer us away from that as much as possible. Just and Lisa, maybe I'll start with you. And again, I think that sort of semi-external perspective is really valuable for those of us who work directly in the sector day in, day out. But I've always sort of seen how educators view themselves as professionals is as close to, separate to better funding, is as close to a bit of a magic bullet to changing how well the sector can work for children that we have. You know, I know, and you sort of say you're not in the sector, but I think you're an honorary member of the sector. You spend a lot of time with educators.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, you're more than welcome, Lisa. You spend a lot of time with educators. You spend a lot of time with leaders as well. What do you think are the, you know, if you had to pick one or two big, you know, challenges in terms of that, how educators view themselves as professionals, so separate to what we think about society, thinking about the educator role, what are the big issues just internally, either individually or in teams for people about how they view themselves?
Look, I suppose the one that always strikes me is that I don't believe educators, and I don't believe that early childhood teachers in particular, see the depth of their knowledge about early childhood and see the privileged position that that puts them in to speak up about children and what children need. you guys are the ones that can articulate this. You guys are the ones that spend all your working days with children, and yet there's something about professionals in this sector, and I think it comes from externally, from the status and standing of teachers and early childhood professionals being so bad, that you're rarely prepared to take that space, to claim it and say, look, we're experts and this is what children need. I also think that there's a lot of anti-professionalism in the sector. So I especially noticed this with early childhood teachers, that they say, oh, we work as a team here. And my answer to that is always, yeah, but one of you went to university for 4 years and got a degree, and you have learnt to think, hopefully, if your degree was good, in a slightly different way than someone that's done competency-based training in an RTO. But there's a real anti-elitism within the profession that, you know, denies that some people have higher qualifications.
Yeah, and Lisa, I think that's interesting, because I remember the development of this, and it was a very, very long time ago. And I recall in my first role as an early childhood teacher,
Remember that far back?
Yes, I can. I had an assistant who prepared the paint and, you know, did those, all of the peripheral things, so that I could get on with the business of teaching. And I went in there with all the freshness of a new early childhood teacher and went, oh, my goodness, you have to be included in this, and I want you to do some of the group times. And she went, no, thank you very much. I've done this for 30 years. I'm very happy, and you're the teacher, and I'm not paid enough. And it was it was like, oh, my goodness. And then, of course, it really did evolve significantly over the 80s, where I guess it was the expansion of long daycare as well, where people were doing more work that was kind of spread over the day. And I don't know whether I'm portraying it in a good or bad way, but it did sort of promote this idea that everybody should be doing exactly the same work all the time. So I don't know whether we've done ourselves a favour or not with that. This will be a contentious one, of course.
Look, I'm sure it will be, but how many times do you go into a service and not know who are the teachers and who are the educators? And people say, well, why should you? You know, like, we all do the same work. I don't know. I think that, you know, like, there's very few professions where, like, you know, let's take, you know, nursing or medicine, you know, you always understand the hierarchy in those professions, and you understand that you're going to get a different answer if you ask a question from someone at the top of that spectrum than someone, you know, not so high.
So what would both of you consider to be perhaps the top three things that would differentiate differentiate people in different roles? What would you identify as those things?
Oh, a list.
It's a professionalism listicle.
It's a profession. Yeah, that's right. That's right. You won't believe what happens next. It's interesting.
I'd say analytical thought would be up there at the top, and understanding of the research behind what you're doing. Mm-hmm. So that I would expect a teacher to be able to explain to a parent the science behind what they're doing, and to analyse that in terms of, you know, what's happening in various different sorts of service types and in different parts of the world, etc.
Well, I'm terrible at listing things, Leanne, but I might just add to the controversy by saying a couple of things. So I've worked in early childhood for a long time, and I'm an early childhood teacher myself. There is a significant and visible and very clear difference between early childhood teachers who have, gone straight into an early childhood degree and then started working in a centre, than those who have completed the TAFE qualifications first and then gone on to do the
early childhood teaching degree, usually while they're working as well, there are significant differences in their practice and there are significant differences in their understanding and resilience in working in those very complicated, chaotic, often spaces with young children. And unfortunately, I've seen this time and time again, the ones who sort of come in directly into centres, having got that degree, usually don't stay very long because they struggle. They have the intellectual capacity, but what the degree doesn't prepare them for is the actual nuts and bolts of being in a centre, you know, with upwards of, you know, 60, 70, 80 young children a day.
And I think your thoughts are backed by research there, Liam, the stuff about people leaving the sector, the research that's come out of Queensland, Dr. Sue Irvine, shows exactly that. People are leaving the sector. And so is it a question around how people are prepared to work in the sector and how they actually are, working through their qualifications? I mean, maybe there's some really good questions around how that happens in universities.
Or maybe they just come into the sector fresh from their degree and then get absolutely shocked at how bad the wages and conditions are and can't stick it out.
Well, yes, we've mentioned that before, haven't we? The pay and I mean, I guess there's some of these things around the teacher accreditation that's happening around Australia in various states, and New South Wales is one that's getting on board with teacher accreditation. I know there's varying opinions about this and people are feeling, you know, anywhere between resentful and overjoyed about teacher accreditation. But in terms of pay, I think that those are good steps and good steps towards better pay, but also the greater respect and the professionalism that actually is marking, you know, many professions and needs to happen in the early childhood sector.
I think one of the things for me is separate to, you know, we can't ignore the big picture stuff, which is the wages conditions. But for the purposes of this discussion, you know, I want to keep it a little bit separate just to that internal sense of, you know, value of their own role. I do think there's a huge problem, and I hate to open up this can of quagmire of horrible worms, but if you look at, you know, some of the online Facebook groups, you know, I haven't been on them in years because they terrify me, but the, you know, the EYLFNQS ideas group or something, and there's a few of them. There's no other way to say it, but it is, there are some horrible, terrible views on people's work there. And I do worry that there's this undercurrent of the sector, which, you know, to put it diplomatically and nicely, I think people just don't understand how important their role is. They may be in the sector for the wrong reasons as well. As I sort of said in a previous podcast, I interview a lot of people coming in, you know, looking for roles in early childhood centres, and, you know, the amount of times I hear, I just love children. And I said, well, that's not really good enough. This isn't, you know, about, you know, loving and caring for children. This should be about your ability to work to support the learning and well-being of children. We've sort of discussed a lot of more detail. Is a lot of it just as simple as, do people take their job seriously?
Liam, I think a lot of people take their job really, really seriously. I have a different problem with some of the Facebook groups than you, which is about the policing of practices that happens on those groups. So that, there's whole Facebook groups set up to laugh at other people's practices. And some, I enjoy reading some of those things as much as everyone else, because some practices are so hideous that, you know, you can do nothing but laugh, otherwise you'd cry. But I think that there's a lot of, what's it called, norming and storming? Is that what the corporates call it? Where people are saying, you can't do this. And so I often see people, I'll often follow a thread quite a way through to see what's happening. And I realise that the person that posted it has a genuine inquiry because they've never come across something. But by the end of it, they have been so shamed for not knowing that.
It's a thing. There's a significant difference.
Never ask again.
Yeah, there's a significant difference between And if I wasn't clear in the previous sentence, there's a significant difference between, when I say the sort of horrible stuff, I mean just deliberately provocative and I don't care if everyone hates it, I'm going to do it. And they're deliberate. Being people who are genuinely trying new things, trying different things. Yes, they may not be fitting into progressive contemporary practice, but they are willing to learn. They are willing to engage on that discussion. But part of me worries about the people not taking it seriously is because they don't understand how serious it is. I'm not sure how good we are as the same discussion with families. Are we good at spruiking why this is really important? That it's not about, you know, for me, the professionalism isn't about necessarily the activities or experiences you're planning, but how do you respect children? How do you value children? How do you uphold their rights? How do you interact and engage with children on a day-to-day basis? That's the stuff I look for in terms of professional identity for the educators I work with. It's not necessarily the amazing, thing they planned with trucks and dinosaurs. It's more, wow, the conversation I just saw that educator had with that child really valued that child's point of view, and particularly for children experiencing, you know, different...
Liam, I think you're saying that relationships are really important.
Heaven forbid. Well, but it is. But if we looked at a lot of the stuff coming out of the sector, whether it's, you know, we're sort of picking on Facebook, but even in, you know, even in other sort of forums and sector groups, I don't know if we spend far more time worrying about documentation than about relationships with children.
Yeah, and that whole relationship aspect is your pedagogical knowledge. That's really, you know, that's the significant component of knowledge that you possess about children, about practice, and significantly the marker or biggest characteristic of a profession is acting autonomously. And so that's actually apparently the big key to a profession is acting autonomously. And you've got to have all of those things in your toolkit before you can act autonomously. And also no fragmentation, which is interesting. So we've talked a lot about fragmentation, and that's another marker of a profession is no fragmentation in a profession.
What, I don't understand what fragmentation means.
Well, I think that you can have opposing views, but you can't have people falling away and not agreeing ever on practice and pedagogy.
And I think probably this is as well some of the, mm-hmm. the crossover between professional identity and leadership. As I was thinking of this topic this morning, I was thinking back to my, you know, first experience in an early childhood centre, and I was an appalling hire. I should never have been hired. I was doing the first year of a media degree. I thought it was childcare. I thought it was basically babysitting. I liked children and done some actual babysitting and thought, oh, this will be some good money, you know, while I, you know, cavort around at university and waste my time on a media degree. Thank heavens I didn't go with that. But the media is not going so well right now. But what could have happened was that I started work and sort of continued on that path, didn't learn anything. But what did happen, incredibly fortunately, is I somehow lucked into a centre where they just did not accept that. I was very, very clearly told, you will take this job seriously, you will not do that, you will do this, and was, for want of a better word, just forced to understand, you know, the work and do it in a proper way. But what I worry sometimes about...
Give that director a pay rise, I say.
But they imagine the entire team having to put up with 18-year-old Liam. God, putting up with me now is hard enough back then. God,
I actually reckon give that director a pay rise.
But I think I worry if that's not the... And I might speak particularly from the ACT context here, that is far less likely to happen because the more experienced educators and teachers and directors are leaving the sector. They're being replaced by younger and less experienced educators. And this is, again, not to, you know, there are fantastic young educators coming into the sector, but we do need to also think about, you know, the that sort of, you know, rock solid fount of, you know, wisdom and experience, which says, no, you will do this and I don't particularly care whether you like it or not. I think as a sector, we're actually a bit too worried about everyone's feelings right now and, you know, how is everyone feeling about, you know, what they're doing, whereas we probably just need people to go, no, you will speak to children this way. This is how we do it at this centre. If you don't like it, you need to find another place to work.
Mm. Yes. Being strong, being professional. Indeed, and removing all 18-year-old Liam from the service.
that is a must. But, yeah, I think, you know, it's that thing, you know, if you look at, you know, doctors and nurses and pilots, there are specific ways to do what we do. We know what is good and we know what's bad. If we tolerate bad practice, we're allowing that unprofessionalism to fester. But if we challenge it and we say, no, this is how we're going to do it and it's really important we do it this way and here's why and it's about at the end of the day, you know, supporting children's learning and well-being, that is the stuff I think where the profession starts to build around that and people value what they do.
Yes, yeah, rise up early childhood leadership.
Liam, again, just looking at this from a slightly external perspective, one of the things that strikes me when you're talking about, you know, like surgeons and pilots, et cetera, is there wouldn't be as much uncertainty about how you do something. They wouldn't be sitting around having the conversations about documentation that this sector has.
No, but I think that, again, it's hard when you sort of got, you know, and I've sort of commented in some of our conversations, I'm far better at writing as I can redraft myself five times when I'm trying to just talk off the top of my head and never goes so well. But I also think sometimes as a sector we get distracted by the wrong conversation, so we're too worried about the stuff that is malleable and it is changeable. And yes, that's all there and it should be because, you know, a centre, you know, in Cape York is going to be different than a centre here in, you know, Metro Canberra. What, to me, there are some fundamentals to the sector that should be consistent everywhere, which is, you know, all around that engagement with children space, that we should, all interactions with children should be respectful, we should be role modelling, you know, positive communication and sort of behaviour with children. And there are some of those fundamentals around that that actually need to be sector-wide and need to be, you know, completely or, you know, militantly, you know, focused on and led by the leaders in the sector.
Are they spoken about enough then?
Well, probably not. We're going to start it with this podcast, so Lisa will be out here tonight. But no, I don't think it is. I think we get distracted. It's the chasing butterfly stuff. We get distracted by Reggio-inspired, you know, practices when there's actually just some fundamental things we need to get right and they need to be just completely militantly enforced by everyone in the sector.
And that's that fragmentation thing, Lisa, that I was mentioning is, you know, if we're disputing curriculum all the time and approach, like everything is up for discussion and dispute and people move off in a thousand different directions on children's learning and curriculum, then that's where that fragmentation is and that's where the professionalism is undermined.
The Early Education Show Snapshots is hosted by Lisa Bryant, Leanne Gibbs and Liam McNicholas and is produced by Liam McNicholas. Find out more about the show at earlyeducationshow.com. You can also find us online at Early Edu Show or one word at Facebook and Twitter. If you're enjoying the show, please consider leaving a rating and review on the Apple Podcast Store or by clicking Support the Show on our website. Thanks.